Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Today is Wednesday, March 8th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly lunch and learn. And this week we are studying Parshat Tetzaveh. It's also Parshat Zachor this Shabbat, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the Parsha. And I want to start with two questions. The first question... 172. Oh, I didn't hand out the source books. Sorry about that. Everyone kindly take one of these. Okay, and turn to page 170. What do I want to look at? 178, please.
I've got plenty of them over here. Anybody else need a book?
Okay, so... We are in the parshiot that are dealing with the building of the Mishkan, the building of the tabernacle, the traveling temple that Bnei Yisrael took with them as they were moving from Egypt through the desert, ultimately to get to Eretz Yisrael. And we come to a section of the narrative where the construction of the Mishkan has been concluded. Okay, so we pick up. Hold on. Okay, we pick up on page 178. After the Mishkan has been completed, right? We then read the following verses from verse 38 until the end of the chapter, which is talking about the Karban Tamid. Okay. So v'ze asher taseh al hamizbeach kivasim b'nei shana shnayim layom tamid. This is verse 38. Now this is what you shall offer upon the altar, two yearling lambs each day regularly. Etakeves achad taseh b'boker v'etakeves asheri taseh ben ha'arbayim. You shall offer the one lamb in the morning, you shall offer the other lamb at the twilight. Right? This is the Karban Tamid shel shachar, and the Karban Tamid shel ben harbayim, the morning daily offering and the afternoon daily offering. V'saron sol balul b'shemen katit reva hahin v'nesech revi'it hahin yayin lekeves echad. There shall be a tenth of a measure of choice flour with a quarter of a hin beaten oil mixed in libation of a quarter hin of wine for one limb, etc., etc. And then we get to a key verse in verse 45, which is on page 179. Where it says, "V'shachanti b'toch bnei Yisrael v'hayiti lahem le'elohim." I will abide among the Israelites, and I will be their God. Okay, so there are two questions, but maybe we can combine them into one. Two questions that are asked on this section. So let me see if we could figure out the question without giving it away explicitly. Yes, Chana.
Why we need, first of all, why God need all these korbanot?
Okay.
It's one question.
Good question.
And the other one that we didn't read, but there are so many details about the Mishkan and the clothing of the Kohen. So why is that?
Okay, those are not the questions I want to address in this class. Okay. They're good questions. Just very quickly... The question about why God needs karbanot, I think the answer is that God does not need karbanot.
Right.
Right. We need the karbanot for us. So why do we need karbanot? Why did God choose this method of karbanot to give us to serve Him? And so there are different answers which are offered. Some suggest that the reason we have karbanot is because this is actually a very interesting answer. That is what the other nations of the world were doing. That's what the Jews were familiar with from Egypt. And God basically said, it's not a good idea for me to try to create a completely brand new methodology of worship, because it's going to be too much of a shock to the system of B'nai Yisrael. So let me do something that they're used to, and I'll just, we're just going to redirect the kavanot. Right? We're just going to redirect the intention of these karbanot, and they are as a way to serve God, as opposed to serve the pagan gods, let's say, of Egypt, or any of the other nations that the Jewish people met on their way to Eretz Yisrael. Okay,
so
when it comes to the details, that's also a very interesting debate. Some suggest the details are meaningless, meaning there have to be details, right? If you're building a temple, you have to build it in a certain way. So God said, build it this way. He could have said, build it another way. And so some commentaries do not try to find any meaning with the details at all. And some try to find specific meaning with each, every pamon, and every design, and every color, every design specification has some sort of symbolic meaning. That is an interesting question you raised, and it really taps into a universal debate amongst the commentaries. But the questions that are, so let's just ask the question here. Where in the Torah do we have the rules of the karbanot?
In Vayikra.
In Vayikra, right? And we also have the Karban Tamid in Bamidbar. Right? But not in Shemot.
Right?
But here, right after the Mishkan is completed, right, we have a whole section where all of a sudden the construction of the Mishkan is interrupted with the details of the Karban Tamid, of the daily morning sacrifice and the daily afternoon sacrifice. So what's it doing here? It seems like it's out of place. It doesn't belong here. All the other karbanot are talked about elsewhere in the Torah. What's it doing here? Furthermore, connected, if you look at verse Mem Hei 45, this seems to be the most important pasuk in the section. V'shachanti b'toch b'nei Yisrael v'ayiti lahem Elohim. The purpose of the Mishkan, the purpose of the building, page 179, the purpose of building the Mishkan was to have it so that God's presence rested amongst B'nai Yisrael. That's what we read earlier, right? V'asuli mikdash, v'shachanti betocham. If you build the mikdash, I will live amongst you. So what's this doing here? This should be, this verse should be the final verse of the building of the Mishkan. Why is it buried in the section that deals with the Karban Tamid, which was a very sort of mundane, regular, certainly not special, because it was done every single day, twice a day, aspect of the Mishkan. So why is this verse, which seems to be the whole purpose of the Mishkan, why is it stuck, sort of buried, hidden in this section? Yes, Ron?
You got to feed the workers.
But they don't, this is a karban, this is not eaten.
It sure is, karban was eaten.
Not every karban was eaten.
I think that's the point.
Okay, and this was an olah, this was a burnt offering.
Right.
This is a burnt offering.
Maybe that's the point.
What's the point?
God is there every day for us.
Okay.
Not, you know, just something special.
All right, so good, let's hold on for a second. Another question. So those are two questions. Okay. Now I want to ask another question. Yeah.
Is God is everywhere? Why?
How do you know that?
That what he created the world. He's here, there, and everywhere, right?
Only because we have a song. Hashem is here. Hashem is there. Hashem is truly everywhere.
No, but God is controlling the world, right? He created.
I believe he does.
He's sustaining the world.
Ken?
He gives the Geshem, the Shemesh, the everything, right?
Yes.
He's sustaining the world. So why you need a house? Is Ruach.
Good question. That's a conversation that David HaMelech had with God. Also, you're full of good questions today, Chana. Yes.
Yeah, I came with good spirit. There's just more of God's presence and energy.
I say that again.
To do with energy and more of God's presence at the within Mishkan,
right,
compared to everywhere else. It's like a place where we can go as humans to actually feel ourselves, our human need to connect.
So that's a very interesting point in the sense that is the Mishkan, or I'll phrase it as a question, is the Mishkan or right, in our modern times, is a synagogue, right, which is the Mikdash Ma'at, right, the mini version of the temple, right? Is that a place where God's presence is felt more? Maybe it, so I'm sure there are some people who would say no. And some people would say yes.
I've got something to say. Not yes or no. But maybe the building itself not.
Right.
But once you gather everybody in it and we're all connecting, especially during the Kedusha or something like
right.
that, then yes.
Okay, so it could right. It could be.
There are those who say like Hasidim who say it's better to kind of meditate alone.
Okay, I want to get to the second question. I want to get to the second question, and then we'll try to answer them all together. The second question comes from the introduction to the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is a commentary on the non-halachic parts of the Talmud, the parts of the Talmud that we call the Agadah, the Agadot, similar to Midrashim, right? And in the introduction to the Ein Yaakov, there's a fascinating point which is made, and I want to share it with you. By the way, just before we do that, right, I want to point out that the word tamid, which is the word that we use here in, let's say, verse 38 and in verse 42, in the section that we're reading, the karban tamid, the daily or consistent offering, right? The word tamid appears in the Torah a total of 35 times. 34 times it has to do with the Mishkan and with Karbanot. So that is something which is very important to remember and is very telling, right? The notion of consistency, the 34 out of the 35 times the word tamid, consistent or always, is used in the Torah, is connected to the Mishkan, most of the time connected to the various karbanot and the various avodah, the service in the Mishkan. Anyone know where the 35th time is, where the word tamid is used?
Near tamid?
That's related to the Mishkan.
Oh, that's right.
That's related to the Mishkan. That's one of them. That's related to the Mishkan. Yeah, anybody? Anybody watching at home want to make a comment on the Facebook Live? So The 35th time the word tamid is used is in Devarim, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Bet, about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Asher Hashem Elokecha Doresh Ota
Tamid
Einei Hashem Elokecha Ba Mereshit Hashana V'ad Acharit Hashana. So you have 34 times about the Mishkan and one time about Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so now back to the Ein Yaakov. Pardon?
Where did you read what you...
That's in the Torah. That's in
that's in
Devarim. The last pasuk is in Devarim, Perek Yud Aleph, pasuk Yud Bet. Yud Aleph, Yud Bet. Okay. So in the introduction to the Ein Yaakov, right, we have the following. You have it in front of you on page 1, and it's one of my favorite agadot. It's also, and the explanation is also one of my favorite teachings. So first of all, he begins in the previous paragraph by saying, I've seen the following midrash, but I can't find its original source. So it's unclear where this comes from, but he quotes it nonetheless. He says as follows. There's another version of this, which we'll see in a minute, but the Talmud asks, what is the most, the pasuk kolel yoter? What is the verse in the Torah that represents the most generally important verse, right? What's the most generally important verse? The verse that offers the most important general advice, okay? So this is the debate in the Gemara. Ben Zoma Omer, Matzinu pasuk kolel yoter, Vuhu Shema Yisrael. So Ben Zoma says, I found the verse that provides the most general guidelines of the Torah, and that is Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That makes perfect sense, right? Right? We could argue that the whole Torah, our whole religion, is based on faith. And so Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, that is the most important, let's use that phrase, the most important pasuk. Okay? Ben Nanas Omer, Matsinu Pasuk Kolel Yoter. Ben Nanas says, no. I have a better one. V'hu V'yahafta L'reacha Kamocha. It's nice to have faith in God, but if you're a jerk, none of it matters. Right? So it really means you have to be nice to people. You have to treat people as you would want to be, as you would want to be treated. I don't think he's suggesting that faith in God isn't important, but, you know, faith in God in practice, right, is going to lead one perhaps to V'yahafta L'reacha Kamocha. Okay? So that's this comment. And then comes along Shimon ben Pazi, and he says something very strange. Shimon ben Pazi omer, matzina pasuk kolel yoter. I have found a more important pasuk. So this, now the stakes are very hot, right? Because we've said Shema, and V'yahafta L'reacha Kamocha. I mean, what's left? Right? What's going to possibly be more a generally important verse in the whole entire Torah? And then he drops the bombshell, which like takes all the air out of our sails, it seems like, et hakeves echad taseh baboker, which is the verse that we have in on page 178, right? Verse 39, et hakeves echad taseh baboker, the most important pasuk, the pasuk that gives us the most overriding general advice that you could give to a Jew, more than have faith, more than treat others the way you would want to be treated, is you shall offer the one lamb in the morning and you shall offer the other lamb in the afternoon.
Why is it more important?
Right, exactly. So those are the two questions we have. What is the section of the Karban Tamid doing right here when the Mishkan is finished? Doesn't it belong in Vayikra or somewhere else where the Karban are discussed? Why is this pasuk of Vishachanti B'tof B'nei Yisrael Vayiti Lahem Lelohim, which seems to be the whole purpose, buried at the end of that section? And what is Shimon ben Pazi talking about? That this verse that we have is the most important pasuk in the Torah. Now, by the way, there's another version of this debate on page 2. If you, in the middle of the section, the Sifra comments on the famous verse, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Everyone see right here in the middle where the indent is on page 2. Rabbi Akiva says this, you shall love your neighbor yourself, is a fundamental principle of the Torah. Okay, we understand why. Ben Azai said, this is the book of the generations of humanity on the day that God created man in the image. This is sort of the parallel to V'yahafta L'reacha Kamocha, that every person is created in the image of God and therefore deserves to be treated well. And then we have the following. The Maharal mentions a textual variant of this Sifra, where a third verse is mentioned as being even greater than the previous two. Shockingly, that verse is none other than the one we quoted at the beginning of our Shi'ur regarding the Karban Tamid, the verse that Shimon ben Pazi quotes, et hakeves echad taseh baboker, et hakeves echad taseh ben harbayim. So there are two versions of this Midrash, right? Both of which argue that this verse of the Karban Tamid is the most important verse in the Torah.
The one that Isaiah here says, these are the generations of...
Right. So that's parallel to V'yahafta L'reacha Kamocha, meaning everyone's created, the end of the Pasuk says, Ki B'Tzelem Elokim, that everyone's created in the image of God.
Right.
And then right? So how is it possible that the Pasuk of the Karban Tamid is more important than V'yahafta L'reacha Kamocha, being created in the image of God, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? What's going on here? Okay, so let's try to answer all of these questions at once. We can see on page 4, this is, by the way, from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. We're going to get the answer to the second part of the question. I believe that the answer to this question, meaning the question is, how is it possible that the Karban Tamid verse is the most important one, he says, is the most profound one. Other religions and belief systems focus almost entirely on spiritual peaks. We're on page 4 where the bracket is. On spiritual peaks, on those exceptional bursts of upliftment, enlightenment, and elevation, on the once-a-year celebration, We too have our celebrations, our pinnacles and peaks, but these are not the essence of our spiritual growth. Judaism focuses particularly on the everyday, the common, regular, mundane activities which comprise the bulk of our lives. We attempt to imbue these with meaning, requiring our growth to take place every day in small increments. The idea is simple. From the very beginning of the tabernacle's function, now this answers the first question, right? What is the section of the Karban Tamid doing in the middle of the discussion of building the Mishkan? And not in the section of the other Karbanot in Vayikra. As Rav Lichtenstein says it here, from the very beginning of the tabernacle's function and every day thereafter, a new foundation is laid, a foundation consisting of the most regular, the most plain daily sacrifice. His point, which he makes earlier in the essay, is the Mishkan is not finished until there's daily, regular, consistent Karbanot in it. That's part of the construction of the Mishkan. The Karban Tamid plays a dual role. It's a Karban, a sacrifice like every other offering, but it's also part and parcel of the definition of the Mishkan. Just like you needed a kiyor, a basin, and a shulchan, a table, and a mizbeach, an altar, for the construction of the Mishkan to be complete, you also need the Karban Tamid for the construction of the Mishkan to be complete. Because without the building itself is meaningless, unless there's consistent avodah in it, right? This is, by the way, we have this halacha with a shul. You could build the most beautiful shul. It does not take on kedushat beit haKnesset. It does not take on the sanctity of the synagogue until you daven in it once. Buildings in and of themselves are not holy. What we do in the building makes it holy. So the Mishkan in and of itself was beautiful, but it's not holy unless there's a Karban Tamid, unless there's a morning daily offering and an afternoon daily offering. Right? He says, third paragraph from the bottom, we learn this idea from the tabernacle on a halachic level, and we saw it in the Mishnah Menachot with the regular daily sacrifice. The tabernacle could not exist. However, this concept applies with greater strength to a greater, more difficult construction, to that of human personalities. It is all too easy, especially for a yeshiva student, and that's the audience that Rav Lichtenstein is talking to, we can apply it to ourselves as well, to grow accustomed to the daily regimen and to lose focus of the opportunity for growth it offers us. One may focus instead on the high points of the year. Later, when one leaves yeshiva, one realizes the crucial importance of daily life, not just the peak experiences. One's focus must be on daily, step-by-step growth and development. Every regular time we set for learning Torah, every regular mitzvah, every modeh ani, every blessing, every opportunity to give charity, every one of life's seemingly irrelevant moments can be used as a milestone, as a way on our journey towards becoming better human beings and holier Jews. So that answers both questions. This section of the Karban Tamid is not with the other Karbanot, because it's not like the other Karbanot. It plays a dual role. This verse of Vishachanti Betoch B'nei Yisrael, verse Memhei 45, is, as I said, building a straw man buried here, because when is God's presence with B'nai Yisrael? After they build a building or after they do the Karbanot in the building? God's presence does not dwell in the building once all the bricks and mortar are done. God's presence only dwells in the building once the daily sacrifices are brought, once we show consistency, once we show a sense of regularity in our Avodat Hashem. So it makes perfect sense that the claim that God's presence rests in the Mishkan is only made after the discussion of the Karban Tamid. And this is the exact point made by Rav Shamson Rafael Hirsch on page 5. With the preceding verse, the prescriptions on the bottom of page 5, where it says verse 38. With the preceding verse, the prescriptions concerning the erection of the sanctuary, its construction, and that its consecration, and that of the priests are concluded. Right? So now we're done building it. But it is not the establishment and consecration of sanctuary and priest that itself brings about the promised goal of God's presence in the nation, as expressed in the verse, V'yasuli mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham, build me a sanctuary and I will dwell amongst you. This goal is only achieved by the priests expressing ever afresh on behalf of the nation the daily devotion of the lives of the people to the ideals of Judaism as represented by the sanctuary. This, and only this, makes the Mikdash a place of the Shekhinah, of God's presence. And this is what is expressed in verses 38 through 46 as the realization of the object of the whole building of the sanctuary. The establishment of the temple does not achieve this object once for always, but only provides the possibility, right? Now we have the building, so we have potential for holiness. It is only achieved when the sanctuary becomes alive and active through the acts of devotion of the people, which is to be equivalent to the heartbeat. That's very beautiful, right? That you have a building, which is the body, but if you don't have a heartbeat, it's dead. And so the building could also be dead, even if it's the Mishkan, even if it's the Beit HaMikdash, right? By the way, when we learn in the Gemara that one of the reasons we fast on the Shivah Asar B'Tammuz, on the 7th day of Tammuz, is what? Batla Karban Tamid. On that day, because of the siege, we had to stop bringing the daily sacrifices. The Beit HaMikdash wasn't destroyed until Tisha B'Av. But on the 17th of Tammuz, we knew the end. We knew it was over. Because if you can't build, if you can't bring the daily karban, the building is meaningless. Right? So that's why we fast on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Because the whole purpose of the building was no longer viable. Right? It is only achieved when the sanctuary becomes alive and active through the acts of devotion of the people, which is to be equivalent to the heartbeat, the central driving force of the national life. This constant devotion of the people to the ideals of the Divine Torah, to which the sanctuary was built, which is the necessary condition for the purpose of the sanctuary, is the meaning of the Tamid offering. This is why it takes place. This is why its place is here, in direct connection with the Miluim offerings, which were brought at the end to sort of ceremoniously decree the building's done, right? And so it's a beautiful idea, right? It's a beautiful message, right? That the key in Judaism is Tamid, right? Is consistency. It's not the big moments. The big moments are nice, right? But that's not really what religion is about, and it doesn't sustain us. What sustains us is a constant daily commitment to Torah, to mitzvot, to tefillah, to chesed, right? And that's the whole entire purpose. So now we understand also why in these two midrashim, these verses of the Karban Tamid are deemed more important than V'yahavera HaKamocha and Shema. Those are big, like special statements. But really what we need, right, those things are good, but they're only good if they're practiced every single day consistently on a regular basis. Yeah.
Who wrote this thing about it's a chance to build every day?
This is Rav Lichtenstein.
Yeah. Is it okay to respectfully disagree with him?
Sure.
I think the point may be just the opposite.
Okay.
One time I was talking to one of my students, and we were talking about kosher. I said, how can you remember all this? How can you do it? I don't. It just comes naturally. I don't think about it. You know, and when something comes up, it's just, then you say, what about this? What about that? And I think that's what's going on here. That it's not a matter of, oh, every second is a time to have one of these great building experiences.
Right.
Or rather, it's just something you do. That's how you are. But, you don't think about it. You don't know much. It just becomes the way you live your life.
I think the Rav Lichtenstein is saying that those are the building blocks of a true religious personality.
Precisely.
Right.
Precisely.
Now, it's true, by the way, that for some things, not for shopping for kosher food, but for eating. Right. That's what brachot are for. Brachot are supposed to make us pause before we do all those things that have become natural to us, so they can become spiritual moments.
That I understand. But eating is like the culmination of shopping and cooking and this and what pot do you use and what do you buy and what can you cook together. At the end, it's only a sanctification of this whole process that you do as a matter of second nature. I mean, it doesn't occur to you, and if you're going to, you know, pour the spice in, you have to look, is it par?
Right,
it,
so right. That's
and
true.
And it's without thinking. And well, then at the end, you have this problem.
Right, I think that's
it's
right,
without
but
thinking,
I,
it's natural.
I think that that's not
it's
ideal.
Natural.
I think that's not ideal. I think it should be natural. If possible, it should be natural and moving.
Right, but it's too much. You can't make every step you take some great, it
yeah,
blows
that's
away.
That's true. I think it could become overwhelming. Yes, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
I think that's
yes.
Why. I think that's its purpose, to bring you back to the
right, that's right.
Okay. All right, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Okay,